Hey guys, this is another bonus episode. I was invited on to talk hunting on the We Get Outdoors podcast with Rob Yates, and had an interesting conversation. Rob is a late onset hunter and really just kind of started getting into it and starting to fall in love with it. So he asked me on and we had a nice conversation.
We Get Outdoors Nation. Today we're joined by a bow hunter, a TV personality, podcast host, author, and general awesome American, Mr. John Stallone. Welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having us. Thank you. Thank you for being on.
It's a pleasure. I can't wait to have this conversation. You don't know how long I've been waiting to ask you some of these questions and some of the things in my head. But John, before we go any further, what should the world know about you?
Well, I guess there's a lot. I've been hunting since I'm 5 years old. It was the first time I actually took the field with my dad. During an actual hunting season for deer. I'm sure he took me out before that, but my first memory of hunting is my dad propping the gun up on a fence at 5 years old and shooting a deer with him, which I don't recommend, by the way, because it almost traumatized. It was a little too much of a kick on that gun, having a five-year-old shoot with it. The overall experience was amazing. My dad is the reason why I do what I do today, because he took me every morning. We'd go out before school, you know, with the BB guns and go hunt squirrels and in Long Island. And, just constantly, he's a very adventurous person. My dad gave up hunting about 20 years ago, by the way. He was fairly accomplished hunter for somebody who never really or didn't have the tools that we have today to learn how to hunt and to, you know, whatever. He did very well as a hunter, and he's a very adventurous soul, like I said. And now he photographs for wildlife, and he hunts with his camera, you know, hunts animals with his camera. He's always, you know, super awesome close shots and getting at the bow range with his camera and taking pictures. So I followed in his footsteps with my desire to be out there, my desire to see what's over the next hill, you know? So I got that from my dad, and I'm trying to instill that in my children. Also, I have a 11-year-old, a 9-year-old, and a 5-year-old. The 11-year-old is already taking a couple animals herself. The 9-year-old doesn't want to have anything to do it. And my 5-year-old, my son, he loves it. All three of them love fishing, which as a kid, I loved fishing, but I don't really, I can take it or leave it now. You know, it's like one of those things that I'll do it just because it's okay and fun to do. And I know they enjoy it, but it's not something, I'd much rather be hunting.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm gonna get my get out of jail free cards with my wife, it's gonna be to go hunting. So,
what is it about the hunting that puts that spark in your eye? Is it the stalk or the kill or the filling the freezer or the physical pursuit? All of it.
I view hunting like a chess game. You know, I like all the moving parts of it. I love leading up to the hunts. I love the tinkering with my bow, and I love the practice. I love the, you know, building arrows. I love making bows. I love, you know, all of it. But if I had to narrow it down to one thing, it's just the adventure of it all. I love going to hunt new places. I love exploring things and figuring out, like, I don't consider myself a trophy hunter. Like, I don't need to kill the biggest, baddest animal out there. If the experience is what I'm looking for, then I've had a great hunt, you know, and the few times that I haven't had good hunts is when the experience was ruined by whatever, you know, too many other hunters or, you know, just bad weather, whatever the case may be, you know. And it doesn't happen. It hasn't happened often. Once or twice, through maybe three times in my life, where I was like, yeah, that hunt wasn't great. You know, I don't have to come home with something as long as I can take away the things that I'm looking for in a hunt. And I don't even know what those are specifically. I'm gonna be honest with you. I just know that it's a part of me. I live it, breathe it. You know, like I dream about it. It's, you know, other than eating, it's probably my favorite pastime. It's definitely my pastime. I'm a big foodie too. I like to eat a lot of good food.
Well, there's not many people who can go and take their passion and turn it into a career. So I guess there must be something very powerful in there for you.
Yes.
Hunting's a really interesting thing because if you were to go rock climbing, you pretty much can guarantee when you get in your car and drive to a rock face that you're going to go rock climbing. If you're going to go kayaking, you drive to the sea and you put your kayak on. Hunting, you can spend, and I have done several times last year, you can spend days on end traipsing around trying to find the animal you wish to fill your tag with and come drive back home 4 days later with an empty truck and you're pretty tired and dirty.
Right.
And so I always think that what people don't get is it's actually far more than releasing the arrow or pulling the trigger or whatever it may be, because I've got a friend in Washington State who goes out for an elk every year. And I think he gets like eight or nine, one every 8 years or so, but he loves that hunting experience that every year he's back, he's out in the bush in Washington State for, I don't know, several weeks, looking for that iconic elk. And yeah.
Right.
It's a right. Much better experience.
Hunting is in the name, you know, hunting. I mean, we should probably call it searching, but, you know, a lot of people say that's why they call it hunting and not killing. And it's very true. You know, you're spending 90, I don't even know what the percentage is, but I'm going to throw an arbitrary number out there. 95% of the time you're out there spent searching or, you know, planning or practicing, and really the killing part is it's very minimal. There's so much leading up to that one part where you pull the trigger or release an arrow that's what people don't get. Like they don't know the feeling because they don't know what went into it. I always told people, I said, if I, you know, you give me a week and go hunting with, or not even a week, give me 3 days and you see what goes into it, and you'll have a different appreciation, you'll have a different understanding of it. A lot of people just think you go out, you know, they got the Elmer Fudd thing in their head. We've all been brainwashed by mass media about what a hunting is, or, you know, what a hunter is. It's, you know, you're a toothless redneck, you know, running around shooting shit from the truck, you know, while drinking beer. That's the mainstream perception of what a hunting is. I think when you tell people you're a bow hunter, automatically perception changes a little bit. At least in the past it has for me. Like that's what I've, oh, you're a hunter, da 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 da. Yeah, I'll mostly bow hunt. You know, I'll go rifle hunting here. Oh, you bow hunt. Okay. And now they start thinking, looking at you in a little different light. But I still think that the main perception of what the hunter is, you know, Billy Bob. So they just don't understand. They don't understand what goes into it.
It's a little bit like being Usain Bolt in some respects, because I often think, you know, he trains for 4 years for 1 9.5 second moment in an Olympic final. And almost pulling the trigger or releasing the arrow is just like that. You spend all of that time for one blip. It's just seconds, really. And then you've got a freezer full of food. But I think it's as that if people wanted to wrap their head around it, I think Usain Bolt or an Olympian has to be the way we need to think about it, where we train and practice. Because I bet you're out there with your bow multiple times a week just shooting at targets.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when I was a single man, or even when I only had one child, man, I spent probably 5 days out of every week practicing. You know, I did crazy sports-specific type training all the time. Now that one, I'm older too. I got three kids, and it's just time is limited. I don't quite do that, and my hunting has suffered from it because of it. You know, so people are gonna understand. People that spend that kind of time and understand what goes into those things to make somebody a very successful hunter. You know, people that are curious, they can actually understand and relate to it. Because, you know, there's all types of hunters. There's the guys who, you know, and I don't want to minimize people, we'll call them the weekend warriors, the guys who, you know, just go out, just have a good time and enjoy outside. And then there's the opposite, the extreme, the guy that just lives to hunt and he's, you know, spends 90 to a, you know, to 200 days in a year in the field. And, you know, and then there's everything in between. So I don't know. It's just,
it's interesting, isn't it? Cause it's
the word.
You're looking, or in my opinion, when I've only been hunting three or four times now, actually, and I only started last year. So I'm by no means any credible expert, there's a lot of moving parts. And the first for me is, if I'm going to take a shot at an animal, I want the thing to die as quickly as humanly possible and as cleanly as humanly possible, almost not knowing that that's what's happened to them. But at the same time, you have to do that when maybe you've been in the field sleeping on the floor and hiking for days on end. So you're pretty tired, you're pretty grubby. It could often be raining, and yet you've still got to get to that one little split second where you're going to manage your emotions, manage your heart rate, and take a shot that's going to be the very, very best version of you, so that you actually are not just maiming an animal unnecessarily. And I think that's what people think happens, is that the animal suffers for ages and people go out there and bugger it up, for want of a better phrase. I think that might have been true a while ago, but the folks I've been meeting recently, that's definitely not true of them.
Yeah, I don't even think it was ever. I think everybody, for as long as I've been hunting, most people go out with the intentions of one shot, one kill, clean, you know, as humane as possible. I have met one or two bad seeds out there in my life that they don't really care. And it's unfortunate. But, you know, I think you could find that bad seed in any little thing that you can talk about. And there's always gotta be that one person that just doesn't do the sport or the activity or whatever justice because they're that type of person. But for the most part, I think by far and large, that most hunters want to have the most clean kill as possible. And it shows, because most people spend a lot of time, like you said, practicing, perfecting their crafts. It's not just so that they can get one. It's just so they can get one the right way, you know?
So what was it for you that took you away from the rifle and towards the bow?
I honestly don't really know. I don't know. I think at one point I felt that rifle hunting was unfair. Honestly, like I felt like it was unfair maybe. Like, I don't know. I can shoot really far. And I've always been naturally a good marksman with a rifle. Like even as a kid, like I mean, I could shoot a sparrow with a BB gun at, you know, 50 meters with the open sights, and it was like nothing to me, you know. And I might sound like conceited bastard right now saying that, but it was easy for me. And so I was originally, I think I got into it because I was looking for something that was more of a challenge. And then I think anybody who ever shoots a bow, there's a romanticism with it. There's like, I don't know. I don't even know how to explain it, but I know they talk about the, I've heard people talk about the mesmerizing flight of the arrow, or there's something, I don't know, maybe it might be ancestral. I don't know what it is, but something about shooting a bow, because you're part of it all.
Mm.
Like you're connected with the equipment, even on a compound bow or whatever, you're still part of the machine. Really, the only thing part of the machine when you're using a gun is your finger. You know, if you can control your finger, your trigger pull, and you got a great rest, then the gun's a machine. It's going to, you know, the bow is a machine too. It's going to do the same thing basically time in and time out. But the thing about a bow is you are in the machine. You're part of the machine. So your body mechanics and all that stuff. And when you become part of that, it's like, it's just more of a rewarding, I don't know. And then, you know, the closer proximity of the shots and all that stuff just kind of comes into play. But eventually I found my way back to rifle hunting also. Like I found a new love for it. I started hunting differently with a rifle in my hand. I changed my goals. I love it again now. You know, there was actually a point in my life, I'd say 20 years plus ago, maybe, that I kind of looked down my nose at rifle hunting.
Mm.
I'm not proud of it, but I did. But also in that time frame too, I was like, I wouldn't use a rangefinder. I became kind of a bow snob, you know, for just a short period of time. But, you know, I thought that was cheating. I thought, you know, and then eventually I won't even think about taking a shot without, you know, well, I shouldn't say that. There's a certain range that I know I'm confident enough to estimate the range in my head without having to use one. But, you know, for the most part, it's just more ethical. I mean, why would I want a chance of wounding an animal by not using it just so I could say you know, I'm great ranger. Who gives a shit? It's like,
check out the size of my penis.
I don't do that, you know.
It struck me last year when I shot a kudu, which is a South African quite large deer. It's about 3/4 of the size of a horse, a female. And it was the very first deer that I've ever killed, or a buck here in South Africa is what they call all deers. And I get that it's almost unfair part because it was about 350 meters. And by the time you heard the crack of the rifle, the kudu was on the floor dead. I mean, it was, don't ask me how I got a headshot, but I got a headshot and it was gone. And it was an amazingly clean kill. And yet the kudu didn't stand a fighting chance in any way, shape, or form. They didn't know I was there. They were just eating grass, oblivious of the fact that there we were lying with a rifle. And the thing then that brings me back round to the bow is the bow almost levels the playing field a little bit. It's almost as hard for you to shoot the deer as it is for the deer to avoid you. Like actually there's a degree of not a quality, but there's, I don't know, it just feels fairer. And I'm not saying you shouldn't shoot a hunt with a rifle, because I think if that's your thing, go do it. But I think that the skill level and knowledge and everything else with bow hunting must have to be significantly higher.
It is much. But so rifle has at least here, and I've never hunted in South Africa or Africa, but period. But rifle hunts have their own challenges. You know, there's a lot of challenges with rifle hunting that you don't have in bow hunting. For one, the number of people out there. So there are things that kind of level the playing field in was what I'm getting at in that, you know, that type of hunting. And that was my feeling that you said, you know, I was laying 350 yards away. I could shoot it in the head, blah, blah, blah. But if you start thinking about it, you did everything right to get to that 300 yards that they didn't know you were there. Mm. You did everything working up to that, you know, to that point to be able to take that shot and be accurate at that shot with that shot. And it's not just the marksmanship, because marksmanship is just a small part of it. I have friends that can, you know, shoot an aspirin tablet at, you know, 500 meters and not even blink an eye. And you take them out in the field, you stick a deer in front of them at 150 yards and they miss, you know? So that's why I never minimize the ability of a good rifle hunter. You know, and I never compare it to bow hunting. And at least I don't anymore. Like 20 years ago, yeah, all day long. But I started looking at things from a different, you know, with a different set of glasses on, and it made more sense to me now that I'm older, now that I, you know, I've been on both sides of the fence a lot. It's what you want out of it. And, you know, don't let anybody take it away from you. If you're a rifle hunter, enjoy it. Just do it ethically and safely and just have fun with it. You know, I brought up the whole, you know, looking down my nose and stuff like that, so you can understand where I come from, but not because I still feel that way.
Yeah.
So
it strikes me on planet Earth at this point in time, there's a 10% group who are so blinkered about anti-hunting that they're off one side of the equation. And there's a 10% group who are so pro-hunting, they can't hear any other conversation or argument off to the other side. And then there's 80% of the population who are just sat there going, I get it. Like, I get the idea of taking a deer and filling my freezer with organic meat that hasn't been through a horrific abattoir, so on and so forth, feeding my family. And yet they think about it and never actually go and, I was going to say pull the trigger, but what I really mean is go and take action. What are your words of wisdom to that 80% who are just sat there considering it but haven't taken action around it yet?
Well, this is kind of a double-edged sword, because, you know, we want more people on our side, let's say, right? We want more people to be pro hunting. But with that, you know, we get to a certain point and there's too many hunters, then the quality of our hunting goes down, right?
Mm.
Well, you know, I always tell people, and I've been working on hunter recruitment for years now. But there's a certain point where it's a diminishing returns. You just want people who are hunter friendly and will understand it. So I think educating non-hunters about what hunting is and what hunting is to you, and the benefits of hunting as a whole, management, you know, purposes, the revenue from it, all the good positive points of hunting. I think education is the key, and just educate people just so they have an understanding of it. And that when something is presented in front of them, hey, do we ban bear hunting in California or do we not? they're going to side with you, as opposed to siding with the whiners on the other side about, you know, saving precious bears because hunters kill off all the bears, you know, whatever their rhetoric is. But I think, so for me, you know, I look at the 80%, the people that who have an idea of what hunting is in their head, you know, it's going to be hard for you to change that without you showing it to them. So maybe invite them out to go hunting with you one day and see what goes into it. Those people who automatically dismiss hunting, like, oh, how could you possibly do that to those poor animals? My first question to them is, do you eat? And if they say they do, I automatically write them off as just people that just don't, you know, don't have anything up top, you know, because meat doesn't fall out of the sky. It doesn't grow on trees. And for you to be eating meat, somebody else has got to be doing the killing for you to eat the meat. Mm. So for me, a hypocritical thing, like if people that say they eat meat, and I have friends that are like that too. Like, well, actually, I've got some family members even, like on my wife's side, that, oh, John, how do you do that? You know, they don't hate me for it. But they're like, oh, how do you kill the cute little deer? And that, I'm like, you're saying this to me while you're enjoying a hamburger. Like, you can't do that. You're being a hypocrite, you know? Those are the people that get me the worst, honestly. Like, I feel like anybody who's anti-hunting should be vegan. If they're not vegan, then shut the hell up. You know, like, if you're vegan, I can respect you because you're taking, I mean, I don't see eye to eye with you, and I don't believe in your ways, but I respect you because at least you got the freaking cojones to take a stance. You know, you're not doing anything that's animal related. So if that's the case, then okay, you can say that because you've earned the right to say that. But if you are eating meat, using animal products, and so on and so forth, and you still talk like that, you don't have my respect at all. That's my stance on the whole situation. I don't even know if I answered your question, but
I am. It's interesting you mentioned the word education. Education comes in many ways, doesn't it? There's like learning things by accident, and then there's learning things because you get taught it. And right. In 2019, I had what I would now describe as the misfortune of going to a place where they factory rear cows for beef, and then going to an abattoir pretty soon afterwards. And it was for another business that I'm involved in outside of the outdoors. And I felt violently sick observing the animals as they were being reared, or just, I don't even think rearing would be the word. And then the lack of respect, care, attention, and also suffering that the animals were going through to die. And it didn't turn me into a vegetarian, but it did force me to ask some questions around what are you putting in your body and what's happened to it beforehand. And honestly, when I went hunting last year, I went to observe, not to actually shoot. That was my, like, if you've seen one side of the coin, let's observe the other side. And when I saw one of my friends, PJ, take a shot and kill a buck, and it was so clean and quick and painless for everybody concerned, and it was, I won't say it was beautiful, but it was, I can't find the word for you, but it was almost magnificent. I was like, do I really want to kill an animal myself by pulling the trigger? No. However, I actually have to accept the fact that every time I put a steak in my mouth, I'm effectively pulling the trigger. And I'm not particularly pulling the trigger in a very pleasant way, because I've seen how those animals suffer to get onto my plate. And I almost wish more people could go through that experience of like 6 months of soul searching that I went through to get to that point. Because I really don't think that people truly understand how that meat factory industry really works. And it's not pretty and it's not pleasant.
You know, and you know what's even really crazy and unpleasant? Do you know how many animals die every time we cultivate a field?
No.
To plant? Thousands. Okay. Thousands of little mice and birds and, you know, all kinds of different little animals, not to mention big game animals that used to use that, you know, those areas might be dying of starvation now because, or whatever. There's like actual statistics out there that, I don't know what the numbers are. I wish I had this because I didn't know we were going to talk about this, but I wish I had these numbers for you. But basically, I'm going to throw an arbitrary number out there. For every acre of, you know, land that's cultivated, let's say 1,000 different species of animals die. So, you know, people don't understand that, like, unless you're eating something that's grown in like hydroponics or something, you know, in your basement, you have a hand in the death of animals. So like your chickpeas soup, you know, or your hummus or whatever that you're eating is killing animals at some point, you know? Yeah. I that's just the way it is. I don't care if it's organic or whatever. You know, organic just means they're not using pesticides. Like, okay, so you save some bugs' lives. I mean, good for you. But, but you know, it's just, that's just the reality of it. That's the reality of it. And if you know, fish, like the fishing industry is freaking ruthless. Ruthless. Do you know how many animals that are not the target fish end up dying? Because of, you know, commercial fishing? Like, okay. Now, if you're not out there with a pole and a rod and pulling in your own fish, like that's about the only, I guess, clean. It's just like hunting. It's hunting. It, you know, so that's why hunting and fishing are the, like, you know, with a rod and reel, rather, is like the only, like, clean way and morally clean way that you can harvest, you know, meat for your body. That's, I mean, that's like, I, if you're not growing your vegetables in pots and you're inside your house, you're effectively still doing what you're trying to save. You know, you're killing off animals. So.
It's crazy as well.
There's a lot of research out on that. You could definitely
we'll dig around for some of that and put that in the show notes beneath, just to give people some stuff to go read. But it's crazy that, generally speaking, from what I can work out, when you go hunting, you kill enough to fill your freezer, maybe, but then you draw the line. That's the weekend done or the trip done, or you've filled your tag or whatever it may well be, depending upon where you are in the world. But if you go and look at the statistics, they say 40% of all food, commercial food, is just thrown away to trash. Which ultimately means 40% of all animals that are reared for the table actually get thrown away as trash. I just think people should go and get a bit more educated. Sorry, I'm going to go on a soapbox if I'm not careful. So let's move on.
For sure.
So you mentioned before we hit record about. I saw on your Instagram today as well the desire to ban bear hunting in California. So without us disappearing too far down the rabbit hole, what's the news and views on from John on that bear hunting ban in California potential?
Well, you know, it's politically driven. There's ties to the guy who proposed it. The representative who proposed it has ties to Humane Society, So we know it's politically driven, and I know that it's definitely put in place by the antis. There's no science behind it, because bear numbers now are up 400%. 400%. That's and I don't remember the year exactly now, but 400%. And the blacktail numbers are down. And it's not that so much the bears kill blacktails, because they do kill a lot of fawns and stuff like that. But bears steal carcasses from mountain lions. So the mountain lion's forced to go kill another deer. And there's, you know, there's that waste there that, you know, that we were just talking about. And so a mountain lion will kill one deer a week. But now that mountain lion's having to kill two deer a week, or, you know, whatever. So the numbers have been declining for black-tailed deer, and especially in the coast for California, because the bear numbers are so high. And I wish I knew the numbers about this. My buddy Charles Wilbon, he's kind of spearheading the movement right now, and he shared a few numbers with me, and hopefully I don't screw them up. But I mean, the number of bears that hunters actually kill versus the amount of tags that are purchased are, I mean, slim, like small. So all that revenue that's generated for the sale of, you know, of those tags goes back to helping the wildlife out. You know, it's something like 20,000 tags and they kill like 1,700 bear. So
Jeepers.
Yeah, it's like, it's something crazy like that. I don't have the exact numbers, but it's, so if you can imagine, like, what, there's going to be a lot of, you know, negative implications if they get rid of the deer herd's going to get hurt from it. You're going to see more bear human, you know, interaction, because they see it now. So California is the only place in the United States where they ban mountain lion hunting, and it is the only state in the country that consistently has maulings and deaths from mountain lions with people. So, you know, put two and two together. You know, that's going to happen. The deer herd is going to hurt. And then ultimately the bear population is going to hurt when there's too many of them. You know, that's a horrible way to die, of starvation. And bears are notorious for killing off each other. You know, they're very territorial, and the males will kill off cubs if you know, just to make a sow coming back in heat. It's a brutal world that people just don't understand. But, you know, I think the main hurdle here is something you and I, you know, quickly discussed, is the people problem. You know, and the people problem is that there's a lot of hunters that don't bear hunt. Mm. And even some that are against bear hunting, but they don't look at the bigger picture. You know, it's the same thing that we have going on in this country right now politically, is, you know, people just cut off their nose to spite their face. And that's because they're trying to solve one little aspect of their life. You know, if I do this, it's going to solve this little aspect of my life, but they don't look at the big picture. And this constantly goes on in the hunting world, constantly. Hunters are not unified. We don't care. You know, I'm a guy who lives in New York. I don't care about the guy in Arizona that's, you know, trying to save mountain lion hunting, because I don't mountain lion hunt and I don't live in Arizona. So I don't give a shit. And this is a constant thing, where on the other end of the spectrum, you know, the anti-hunting groups have no problem locking arms together, even though, you know, they all have their own little niches. You know, Save the Whales guys have their thing. The Save the Penguins guys, the polar bear guy, they all have their own little niches. But when they need to, they lock arms and come up against us as a unified front. We don't do that. We don't give a shit about Joe Schmo down the block who only hunts turkey. He doesn't care about me because I hunt elk. You know, it doesn't affect them. So if it doesn't affect them, they don't care. But what they don't understand is that little by little, they chip away. They take a little bit more hunting away. They take a little bit more hunting away. Eventually, I'd say 10 years down the line, they're going to come for you and your turkey hunting. And you're going to be like, oh, who's going to help me? fight this fight for my turkey hunting. Well, all those people that were into lion hunting and bear hunting, whatever, and that went away and they picked up a new hobby like golf or whatever because they're no longer bear hunting. They're not there to help you. There's nobody there to stand by your side, you know? And I just think we as a group, as a community, even though it's a very individualized sport and a very, you know, there's a lot of competition and a lot of jealousy and whatever, you need to put all that shit aside. It doesn't matter if you're a bow hunter, if you're a rifle hunter, you're a duck hunter, an elk hunter, whatever, you put it aside, you support hunting. You know, there's certain types of hunting and certain things in hunting that might be bad for hunting as a whole. Like, I don't know, I can't think of something right now off the top of my head, but let's say something outlandish like using robotics, sitting on a computer shooting a deer on a computer screen and it's actually doing it in Texas or something crazy and, you know, stupid. Obviously don't support shit like that. That's not going to help anybody. That's not going to win the hearts of anybody, you know. Chucking spears and torturing animal, you know, whatever stuff like that. That's not going to help anybody out. But in instances like this, where the science backs bear hunting, the social benefits, the monetary, you know, implications, all the stuff, man, there's no reason for you not to, even if you're not a bear hunter or don't like the fact that bears die, you know, by the hands of somebody. Just, you got to understand that it's hunting and you're a pro hunter, support hunting. That's it. You know, and I've been trying to put this for.
If you don't, if you ban bear hunting in California, well, ultimately, in the not too distant future, we're going to have to do something around population management, which is just hunting underneath a different name. Because as you rightly said, you'll wipe out the blacktails. Ultimately, the lions and the bears won't have anything to eat, but equally, the bears will probably be the dominant alpha predator that's in vast bigger numbers. And so can you really actually ban hunting forever? Because you're going to end up in a population management place within just a few years, I guess. It's only going to take a few high-profile bear maulings outside a shopping mall somewhere or in somebody's back garden or something crazy before all the people who said, please ban bear hunting, are going to be having their arms up in the air because the government's not doing enough to protect them.
Right. Yeah, I honestly don't know. This country, especially the United States, because it's a very big sector of the hunting, we've grown up with it. The country as a whole has gone from its infancy to where it is today with hunting. And it's so integrated into everything that I don't think that they could get away from hunting completely. But it could be very much like it is over there in the UK, very controlled, only private land, you know, that kind of, I mean, it could get to that point. I see it possibly. Yeah. I have a degree in wildlife management. I'm a rangeland manager and ecologist, and I have a professional certificate in both deer management and wildlife management. And from when I put that hat on, okay, and I look at it, I always look at it like this: whenever you put your hand into a system, okay, and you alter something, it affects something on the other end of the spectrum. And we see this in the environment. You see this on, I mean, there's a yin and yang, you know? You can't mess with something and not expect it to affect something else. So, like, I think predator control, if you're going to have deer hunting, you're going to have this, you're going to have that, you have to have something to manage the other side of the spectrum as well. And if you're not going to, okay, here's a good story. If you ever get a chance, I want you to look up what happened on, because it's a very sad story, and how we almost lost the most famous deer herd in the United States, which is the Kaibab mule deer. Okay. And the short story of it is, we basically went in there, shot off all the predator, killed all the predators because we wanted the deer herd to get to a certain point. And there was no predators around, but there was still cattle ranching going on. And between the cattle and the deer, they completely screwed up the habitat. And all these deer started dying of starvation and yada, yada, yada. So basically, and this is like the infancy stages of how the United States started, you know, doing its management practices and so on and so forth. But it's just a prime example that once something's been introduced, you know, there's a whole set of, you know, management implications for it. Like you gotta manage it holistically. Everything's gotta be managed holistically. Well, then people, you know, have the argument to say, well, just ban all hunting and just let the predators do their thing. Well, the problem is, so like we have an area down here in Arizona that the last U.S. Fish and Wildlife manager that came into said, let's get rid of all the watering holes. Let's get rid of all the man-made watering, blah, blah, blah. Now, those watering holes have been there for 60 to 100 years, okay, from cattle ranchers before it became a wildlife area. So these deer got used to those things. Mm. The deer population suffered because they took those water out. Well, because their thinking was, well, the deer didn't need it before it was here. Why do they need it now? Well, the weather patterns are different. The amount of rain Arizona gets is different now. All these little things. Plus, it's been 100 years or 60 years. Those deer, you know, and a deer's life cycle is only, what, 5-7 years maybe? And, you know, they got used to that. And, you know, if you look at it lineage-wise, like that deer's father, his grandfather, his great-grandfather, whatever, have all used that water hole, that those deer don't know anything different. And now you take that away, and now all these deer are suffering. So like that mentality of, oh, well, let's just get rid of hunting and, you know, everything will right its ship. That ship might not ever right itself. We've already stuck our hands in there at one point. Mm. It's not, you know, you can't, I guess somebody who's got a really great brain for it all could figure it out, some kind of a way to make something work, but it's not an easy road. It's not an easy task. And honestly, it's going to kill off a lot of wildlife in a very horrific way if you do that. So I think I wish we went around in circles about 10 times for what I was trying to say, but I think hopefully you got the answer that you wanted.
Yeah, well, I got your answer. So that's all I really wanted. I think there's a lot of people who say, oh, well, let the animals sort it out for themselves. But as human beings, what we have to recognize is we've already tampered with the environment to a huge degree just by building houses and putting tarmac down and flattening areas for agriculture and so on and so forth, that actually there's to let it go back to how it was. Well, every American needs to pack up sticks, get back on a ship and go somewhere else. And even then there's a fair chance it won't settle itself out.
Exactly. That's my point. You said it better than me. Thank you.
I summarize everything. Look, just like this. So we're coming towards the end of our time together, and I suppose what I'm really curious about is what's up next for you? You've got TV work. You've got your own private hunting that you do. You've got books. What's on the agenda?
I don't know that I'm going to add any more to my plate. I'm actually not doing the TV stuff. I haven't been doing the TV stuff for a little while now. It's 2016 or 2017 was my last episode that I ever filmed. I still do some like major film work. You know, I might like release one if I have a hunt that I really want documented. I'll do like a documentary style film. But mostly it's just my podcast, which is called Days in the Wild. I spend most of my time doing that. It's it's a type of how-to type podcast. Excuse me. People ask questions, send me questions, and I bring on a guest that I feel is best suited to answer those questions in that niche or that hunting or that species or whatever. So it's fun. I always learn new stuff myself. I share a lot of my own personal experiences in that. We do some storytelling sessions and stuff like that, so guys get to kind of hear what they want to hunt in through somebody else's eyes, and then be able to apply it on their own. It's a fun thing. Still writing, still got my blogs and stuff like that. I don't think there's any more books on the horizon. There are a lot of work.
They are indeed.
Mostly just a lot of hunting, hopefully personally for myself. We guide here. I have a outfitting business in Arizona, and I guide a little bit in South Dakota as well. So that keeps me really busy.
Cool. If people want to come and hang out with you, catch up with you, maybe get guided by you or listen to the podcast, where's the best place for them to come find you?
The best is daysinthewild.com. That is my portal to everything. My guiding service is there. My podcast is there. You can get to my blog from there. So that's the easiest. You can find me on Instagram at John Stallone or Facebook at John Stallone. Days in the Wild is probably the best all around.
Cool. I'll pop the link for that in the show notes beneath. But I know today you're a bit short of time, so I just want to thank you for getting out there and sharing some of the realities of hunting that I don't think people are aware of. And the only way we're going to do that is by media, putting stuff out there that's true and honest and a real reflection of what's really happening out there. And I'd encourage all hunters out there to take your mission of banding together to support each other. Even if what I do is different to you and vice versa, we've still got a lot to lose if the erosion of hunting rights disappears. So please do that. Is there anything from you that you'd like to finish off the show with?
Just be kind and courteous to each other out there, especially those people hunting public lands. That's definitely something that I've seen since hunting, especially since COVID's hit. There's been a lot more hunters out in the field. Just remember, everybody's out there chasing the same experience that you are, so give them the opportunity to do so. So yeah, that's it.
Cool. John Stallone, thank you for being incredible. Thank you for coming on the podcast today. And we look forward to following you through Days of the Wild for whatever it brings for you in the future. Have an amazing 2021.
Thank you very much. You too.